Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
You don't have to do that. It is right here. It is right now.
Falling in love so strange. Said you now, no, no.
How you doing today, James Merrill?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good, man.
Good, good. Welcome back.
It's great to be back. We were just talking off the air. And Stokes not here today. He'll be back tomorrow. With his annoying self already bothering me. Like, somehow, like, Stokely's on my nerves. I haven't seen him in a week.
He is going to put in a day this
week? He's going to put in a day.
Wow.
He's gonna,
all right.
He's going to build that callus back up. And then, and probably take the back half of the week off as well.
Well, I know he's not in on Friday because I'm in with you again down at Blake Street Tavern. We can find something to argue about, yell at each other
about.
I
can't wait.
So that'll be good. He may be on the war room. Is he on the war room on Thursday?
I believe he is on the war room.
Yep, can't wait for that.
Tuck him in there and hear less of him at Brothers Barbecue on Thursday. Will you be there?
I will be there.
Awesome.
I'm part of that. That'll be back-to-back days for him, though, so he'll need Friday off.
That's right.
Now it all makes sense.
Thrilled to be back. I don't like taking really any time. I was just talking to you. Like, I had a daughter this past weekend on Friday morning, Friday early afternoon. We had a little girl, Mia Ray Bai. So we completed our family. We're a family of four now. Brought her home to the 3-year-old. Just really cool, like, life stuff. Like, very, very special, impactful, long-lasting life stuff.
Yeah, that's an interesting moment when you bring home number two and the oldest is still there. Like, I can vividly remember that day and sort of that confused, like, how am I supposed to react look from the little guy.
Right.
It is a pretty special moment. So, yeah, man, I'm excited for you. Those are fun things to go through. Everybody will tell you this. Hey, it goes by fast. You know, soak it in. But, you know, as somebody who's been through a lot of that, trust me, all that's true. Soak all those moments in because they're pretty cool.
Well, it's crazy because my 3-year-old in my own mind's eye is still my baby. But then I'm looking at an actual baby.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa, you're not a baby. You're not even close to a baby.
Like, oh, my God. I remember when you were that size.
Right.
Because, you see it every day. It's crazy. Yeah.
So we're thrilled as a family.
Congrats.
But
congrats.
I'm happy to be back here. We have so much to get to. Thank you for being here today. We're going to have plenty of stuff on our plate. So much to get to. And here's where I'll just start. Last night, watching the Denver Nuggets really beat the brakes off one of the best teams in basketball, the Miami Heat. I know that they were without Jimmy Butler, but that is a team that was 6-1 coming into last night at home, 13-7 overall. Truly one of the more complete teams in the league. A team that was in the NBA Finals 2 years ago, had a down year last year like many others who achieved that success in the bubble. But going to Miami after everything that happened, you know, with Markieff Morris, who still hasn't played, by the way, since that incident, believe it or not, with a neck injury. Who knows? I mean, that's for them to worry about, quite us.
Yeah.
Jokic had missed the last week. Nuggets on a serious slide. He comes back, add water and stir. You go into Miami and we're, up 24 at one point in that game.
Yeah, it was a boat race sort of from the get-go. And look, I don't think that this means, hey, all's going to be fine. Don't worry. The Nuggets are right back to where they used to be. But man, it was just a much-needed, like, sigh of relief. The bleeding has stopped, at least temporarily, and you can kind of get your wits about you and go, all right, what's the plan? Where do we go from here? Because once the snowball starts going down the hill, sometimes that thing's impossible to stop.
For sure.
And man, that's how it felt like it was going, and it was a little bit of a break, both ways you could spell it, right? It was a break on the slide. It was a break in terms of just bad news. It was just good in all regards. I actually thought, though, to me, these kind of moments and these kind of games just reinforce the impact of Jokic, right? Like, there were a lot of people. He was a, I don't know if he was the least popular MVP in the last 30 years, but boy, he was nationwide.
Of course, yeah. I think it's very safe to say that.
In that conversation.
Yeah, whether he was or wasn't, he's in that conversation.
And you see how bad that team is when he's not there. And the fact that they can not only compete, but go on the road and win pretty handily without Jamal Murray, without MPJ, without PJ Dozier. Mm-hmm. Like, they are, you know, kind of, it was kind of Jokic and Will Barton and a bunch of guys is kind of who it's turned into. I guess Aaron Gordon, you can include him on the list. But,
and he's played well here this last sub.
But it's like, man, they went from being a team that was like, they're in the conversation of the worst team in the league when he's not on the court. And they're at least competitive and going to win more often than not when he's there. I think it reinforces just how good that guy is. I actually think he's playing better this year than he did a year ago.
Agreed. This is why when we were at Brothers Barbecue and I had kind of had you guys not against me because we're disagreeing about something in basketball, but I thought he was going to go win the MVP again because I think in today's day and age, you can build a case that's undeniable with advanced stats and data that is more valued today than ever before in all of sports, but especially basketball. Well, I shouldn't say especially basketball because baseball and football analytics have kind of changed things. But now there's such an emphasis on it that like a year ago, there wasn't another candidate. Like it was 95 first place votes, next was 5. If you build a case like that, the people who cast the votes do it with integrity. Nikola Jokic, well, you got to win more games, obviously, but Jokic is leading the Denver Nuggets in points, in rebounds, in assists, in steals, and blocks. I think we are watching one of the great, great players in NBA history in smack dab in the middle of his prime, and there still could be room to grow.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, I think he has a chance to outperform what he did a year ago, and so far he has, and I think he can make a case to be the MVP again. I just think the voters are human and how unpopular that choice was last year. The man, he would have to be Secretariat in the Belmont,
which is what he was a year ago. Yeah,
yeah.
Because if Steph's right there, neck and neck,
Steph's going to win.
Yep, and that's very possible.
And that would be the only reason. Not that he's not deserving of it. Not that he can't play at that level. I just think, boy, he's going to have to run away with it to win what would probably be a pretty close vote, even though maybe based on the numbers and the analytics, it shouldn't be. But here's the other part of it: when he plays, They're fun to watch. They're entertaining. And at the end of the day, that's the whole business. That's what it's all about. That's what we've been arguing about with the Broncos for 5 or 6 years of like, they're bad and they're boring.
Yeah.
Look, the Nuggets, you know, they're going to probably struggle to get into the postseason and probably be in the bottom half of the seeds in the West. And you know what? They'll probably get bumped in the first round.
I don't know about that.
Okay. Which would be great, but that's just sort of my expectations at this point. And that's like, all right, that's a bummer. But if they're fun to watch on the route getting there,
yeah,
and they kind of become this little, you know, the little engine that could, that's even more fun to get behind. So now they're kind of that team to root for, which will at least make the rest of the season entertaining. Here's the other part. The MPJ thing, everybody's like, oh, the championship window. This wasn't their championship window this year anyway. Not with Jamal Murray coming back after the All-Star break. And yeah, that's going to take some time. It's next year. So as long as everybody's back next
it's
season,
so
and healthy,
funny you're saying this. So funny you're saying this because on the Mile High Hoops podcast, which I'm eager to record right after this show, and we'll have it up online wherever you get your podcast a little bit later this afternoon. But I have referred to this year, funny you said it, as the year before the year.
Totally
the
agree.
Year, the year before the year. And I know in the moment, people probably don't want to not admit that, but maybe face that because this team was in the Western Conference Finals and it seems like you're sandbagging this season. But because of the natural dynamics at play with injury, I think that you can fairly say that.
I think you're 100% right. And look, the ideal would have been MPJ never gets hurt. But it's so much better that he gets hurt in November than he gets hurt in April. And then that he has to have the surgery and it trickles into next year.
Right.
Right. This way, you know, whether he comes back this season or not, he's got the whole offseason to get better, and he comes back next year at the beginning of the year, best case scenario, or we assume, 100%. At that point, Jamal Murray will be 100%. Nikola Jokic, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, whatever you want to do, is back 100%. That's your opportunity. That's your time. It wasn't going to happen this year anyway, with Jamal Murray coming back from the injury right before the playoffs. It just wasn't. So better to get it out of the way. Let's get everybody, you know, healthy and right, and you come back for 22-23, that's your window.
Okay, I'm going to give you minor pushback on this year and what the expectations should be for the postseason. We can have that discussion a little bit later in the show. It's DenverFan.com, James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. The Broncos are above 500, and here we are entering December. They're back in the playoff mix. How believable are they right now? James and I have that discussion coming up next.
Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
The Broncos are above 500. This late in the season for the first time since, I don't know, was it? It had to have been 2016, right? When they finished 9-7, because they lost their last four that year, right? So they would have been above 500 at this time in that season. But since then, this is it. James, tomorrow's December. James Merrillat from DenverFan.com filling in for Brandon Stokely today.
A 70-degree December 1st, yes.
How about that? Like,
I know.
Good Lord, it's literally going to be, I saw 69 on my weather app, 70. I
mean, at the golf course.
Just incredible, incredible stretch. What did you think we were in store for on Sunday when the Chargers came in here?
I thought the Broncos were going to get boat raced. I did. I thought Justin Herbert would come in here and pick them apart. And he, to some extent, he was able to do some of the things I thought he would do. But there was one key to the game that prevented him from having the type of day that I thought he would. And that was the fact that the Broncos were able to repeatedly get pressure with four guys.
Yeah.
Their front four,
they were awesome.
They were spectacular. They had him running for his life almost every time he tried to throw the ball. And if you can get pressure with four, there's seven guys back in coverage, and then Vic can be Vic and disguise things and get creative, and it's different kind of zones. And especially with the young quarterback, you can confuse him. And you saw the result, right? You ended up with the interception in the end zone, and then you ended up with the pick six. But if you look at the way the second half went, it's 14-7 going into the second half. It was exactly like so many games we've seen. 7.5 minute drive to start for the Chargers.
Yep.
3 and out for the Broncos where they get -8 yards.
Correct.
And then a 7.5 minute drive for the Chargers. That game very easily could have turned into 21-14 Chargers ahead, and the Broncos had run three plays, but they missed a field goal, and then they threw an interception in the end zone. So that's the formula the Broncos want to play, is, hey, we're going to bend but don't break, because we've seen it over and over and over again. Last year in Vegas, the opener against Tennessee. I mean, if we went through and looked at the...
It goes on, yeah.
Over and over again. That's what they do, especially in second halves. They were able to make the plays and to get a little fortunate. Missed field goals, kind of just more good fortune than you were able to stop them and force the field goal, I guess. I just don't know that formula, and that's the one they want to play because that's what they do over and over and over again, is repeatable. That's what I'm concerned about, because they did what they typically do and what has typically led to losses in the Vic Fangio era on Sunday against the Chargers, but they were able to get away with it because Justin Herbert made a couple of key mistakes. One was a bad throw. The first Surtain interception was just a bad throw.
Yeah,
the second one was just bad luck. It bounced off Eckler's hands and it went right to Pat Surtain and he ran it back. But the Chargers kind of dominated the second half and got nothing to show for it, which is the weird part of it. I don't know that getting dominated time of possession and yardage-wise on a week-in, week-out basis is going to lead to wins. That's so, the part of it that worries me.
I think that if you look at just the stats, you can say that I'm still not going to say they got dominated statistically, even though I understand what you are saying. And I didn't realize that quite those first two drives were both over 7 minutes to start the second half. So
Broncos' second possession was in the fourth quarter.
Crazy. I mean, that is...
Second possession of the second half.
Yeah, second possession of the second half was in the fourth quarter. Yeah, really interesting.
And that was their good drive. It was the swing pass to Javonte Williams for, I think, 42 yards.
Yes.
You got the roughing the passer penalty on top of it.
Correct.
And then Teddy made the play of the... Well, he had two great plays in the game. The touchdown run was a great play. And then his touchdown
throw... He caught
them
off guard with that.
He did.
So I went and...
Chris Harris Jr. stopped.
Yes, everyone stopped.
Yeah.
Everyone stopped. And it looks more egregious when you watch it for the second time and you're not in the moment of the game. Guys are just flat-footed. And they say on the broadcast, like, Teddy does not get outside and go upfield like that. He he creates some space for himself to try to throw. Rarely does he try to get upfield.
He normally does what he did on the touchdown in the second half, where he rolls to the right, buys some time, and then throws it in the end zone.
Exactly.
Which was a really nice throw. I think it was intended for Noah.
I think so, too.
And it turned out fine, but a great play.
And we got to ask Noah about that a little bit later this afternoon when he'll join us.
He dove for it. He was making an attempt at it, and then Saubert jumped in front of him and caught it. But really, other than that drive, and they didn't have the ball much, but that's like all they did in the second half. And it was one good drive. It was really one big play. And then a nice third down conversion by Teddy.
But still, is that enough? Hold on. But still, like, you're talking about a 10-play drive that went 80 yards and went nearly 6 minutes. Like, we're just talking about the drives for the Chargers.
I get it. I'm just saying that formula where you give up two big drives and then another scoring drive to the Chargers, like, did they really stop the Chargers? Did the Chargers stop themselves? That's the question you have to ask. I'm not saying they didn't. They made the plays.
They did. And we have come in here too often following a loss where we're talking about guys not making plays. And guys did make plays. And I get your point about the Pat Surtain picks. Because, honestly, and this is just being real, I would expect any cornerback on the Broncos to make those plays.
Took the words out of my mouth. All these people saying, see, they took the right guy at number 9 and all these things. Really? Is there a corner on the team? Michael Ojemudia, saying Bassey, is there a guy on the team who wouldn't have made both those plays?
Especially the first one. Like, the first one was just such a bad ball, it goes right to you. If you kept your hands down, it would have hit Surtain in the neck.
Right.
So, but he still caught him. But we've come in here too many times where guys didn't maximize plays. Justin Simmons could have had 2 interceptions on Sunday.
I didn't come in
with either of them.
My kids say it to me every week. It's the old cliche, right? If they had hands, they'd be playing offense. And so he made both plays. And I get it, but let's just not act like, all these, Vic Fangio's a defensive guru. It's not like they came out there and forced punt after punt after punt after punt. They gave up a 7.5-minute drive that resulted in a missed field goal and a 7.5-minute drive that resulted in an interception in the end zone. That was the first 2 drives of the second half. Okay. I mean, if that's domination because of what the scoreboard shows, fine. Or you could look at actually what went down and go, there are some reasons to be concerned. Well, is that a formula you can repeat in Kansas City?
No. And we'll get to that. But, was it the Dallas game where you pitched a perfect game? No, those are so few and far between. The Chargers came in, 6-4 coming in? Good football team. Good quarterback. Well coached. They're going to make some plays. Did you ever think during the game that the Broncos were going to blow it?
Yeah.
You did.
At halftime, it was 14-7, and we were doing the halftime chill, me and Rachel and Nick.
That was the one portion of the game after Drew's turnover. We're going to get into that in a second here, where it was like, oh, my gosh, they're going to Bronco this thing.
When I thought they were going to do it at halftime, when the Chargers marched right down the field and then missed the field goal, I thought, maybe it's the Broncos' day. Then they go 3-and-out, -8 yards.
It was, yep.
And then the Chargers march right down the field. Once Surtain had the interception in the end zone, I'm like, you know what? It's just their day.
So outside of those 1 or 2 moments, I agree with you. Those were angst. Those were, make you nervous a little bit from a Broncos perspective. But for the majority of the game, the Broncos were in the driver's seat. For the majority, like my football temperature said, outside of those couple moments, the Broncos were in the driver's seat with running the football, with special teams. I mean, it was the first time this year where I was legitimately impressed with special teams. They were a plus. It feels like a bonus. That's what you should be. You should be effective, and we shouldn't be, falling at the feet for being effective, the feet of Tom McMahon, of course. But I thought it was a well-played game. I've been here for 5 football seasons now, and they've all been disastrous. And the fact that I'm seeing what I'm seeing on Sunday, 2 weeks before that, you're above 500, the fact that you have a big game in December – all this feels good to me.
It does feel good. All I'm saying is that formula, right, where you're bending but don't breaking and things, a couple of breaks have to go your way, and if they do, you win. If they don't, you lose. Okay, that formula turns games into coin toss games. Okay, well, if you flip a coin 17 times, what's your record going to be? 9-8, 8-9. It's where they're going to end up. Okay, so how are they going to get above that if they continue to play this way? Well, then you have to have somebody who can make plays 1 or 2 or 3 a game that doesn't make every game a coin toss game. Who's that guy? I don't know. So I don't think they necessarily have that guy, or if they do, they're not using that guy right. So that would be my question, because it's a little, they're playing a bunch of coin toss games.
Okay. James Mayerlap filling for Brandon Stokely today.
Which is a step in the right direction.
Okay.
It's an improvement.
Okay.
Last year they were flipping a coin and kept calling tails, and it was heads and heads.
Yeah.
So it's a step in the right direction.
You and I got in a heated discussion, and this is why I just laugh, because it's a forecast of where we're going here. You and I got into a heated discussion a few weeks ago. So much so that our boss called me and made sure we were good. It was about a young, promising Bronco. Just how promising was the nature of the debate, and we check in on where we're at with it coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
All right, James and I, James Barrell at DenverFan.com, got into one of the more heated discussions that we've got into through the years. And, of course, you know, we are talking about, you know, I filled in with you last week and I said I was at Poulton Elementary.
Yeah,
I went over there
and
spoke to the third grade. Yeah, they're doing podcasts on the Bill of Rights. And, you know, I went in there and, you know, volunteered some time or whatever. And I said to them, because they were talking about, they asked me about disagreeing. They said, you ever disagree with your co-host? And I'm like, oh.
Every segment.
Yeah, all the time. I said, you guys are going to be doing a podcast about the Bill of Rights. There's other people that do my job that talk about news and bad things that happen in our community. I said, I get to dance in the toy aisle. I'm talking about millionaires who play a kid's game.
Right.
And sometimes we need to recenter ourselves with, like, how upset we get with these sports topics. Like, these guys don't know who, like, we are. Like, or you know, some, I guess some of them do, but, like, I see people going back and forth that on Twitter, like with the real vitriol and venom and disdain for one another. I'm like, you guys are talking about millionaires who play a kid's game that don't know you exist in this universe.
Well, not only that, but if you're right and I'm wrong, or vice versa, well, one, we're going to find out, right? Like, you debate it ahead of time, and then you see how the results go, and
right.
Then you can take a little bit of a victory lap or bragging rights or whatever.
Right.
But it doesn't really impact anything.
It doesn't. Right? It actually doesn't.
It's not peace in the Middle East.
Right.
That's the part of it, like, okay, we can have our opinions, we can strongly believe in them, which I always do.
I know you do.
But, you know, if I'm presented with evidence that contradicts what I once believed, I'm willing to change from it if that evidence comes up.
And which is why I wanted to circle back to this conversation. Because what we were fundamentally disagreeing about, I think it was 3 weeks ago now, we were down at Blake Street Tavern, and it was, what have you seen from Javonte Williams? And I said that my eyes are telling me that this is potentially a special player for the Denver Broncos. A guy that could, you know, climb up the Broncos all-time rushing list. A guy that could be that impact player that can change football games. The one that you were referring to that maybe the Broncos don't have on a regular basis. A guy that kind of pops off the page, and Javonte is doing that for me as a secondary running back to Melvin Gordon. I'm curious, just to circle back, and I know you're not stubborn the way that Vic Fangio is, or can be.
Correct.
I'm wondering if you've seen enough in the last couple weeks that not could move you off your point, but could move you closer to the center of my side of the aisle.
No, but let me preface that with, let me reset what my position was. Right. There's the notion was that he was a special player.
That was not the notion.
Yeah.
The notion
you
was
just threw out potentially in it because potentially wasn't really part of the conversation prior to that Philly game.
No, it was. I said you have to kind of forecast the guy's a secondary back. We're not seeing like a full sample size. And I'm just fascinated with what that can look like.
But here was my controversial take. I said he hasn't shown me yet that he's Terrell Davis, Clinton Portis. Those are special backs I've seen in this town.
No, those are the greatest backs that the town has ever seen.
Right. Well, and Floyd Little,
and
but Floyd
Little
goes way back.
Sure.
I said he reminds me more of Mike Anderson, who was AFC Offensive Rookie of the Year, rushed for 1,400 yards, a bunch of touchdowns. I think he's the fifth all-time leading rusher in franchise history.
He is.
I said that's who he reminds me of more than CP or TD. That was That was my position. And I also have said, and this goes back to the trade deadline, I said they need to trade Melvin Gordon because they need to make this Javonte Williams' job and stop with this running back by committee nonsense and make him the bell cow and see what you got. And then if you run him 20, 25, 30 times in a game where you just really got it going, then we'll know for sure maybe he does move into that category. Do I think he has the potential to be that kind of back? With every passing week, I think there's more potential.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
They need to give him the opportunity. At the end of the day, if we look at this in 5 years, do I think he's more Mike Anderson than Clinton Portis or Terrell Davis? Yeah. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible for him to become. I don't think Clinton Portis was a different kind of back. But could he be as effective as TD was here? Yeah, in a different sort of way. Sure. But if you're going to make me bet, I'm still going to say he's going to end up more like Mike Anderson than he's going to end up like Terrell Davis.
Okay. And you know, you were a little heavy-handed with your phrasing when talking about...
I still think you'd be better off to buy an old Ron Dane jersey and just put Williams on the back.
This is the type of dismissive nature that I'm talking about from you when it comes to Javonte Williams.
I'm just trying to help people not waste their money.
And look at you. See, you're doing it again.
Okay.
You're doing it again. I think that Javonte... If he can stay healthy, and I really believe this, if he can stay healthy, I believe he'll be a top three or four running back in the Broncos history. I'm not going to be so flagrant and after, 11 football games say that he's close to Terrell Davis. That would be just over the top hot take, not willing to do it. He's not even the primary back, but I think that the Broncos have drafted. Let me remove the word potential from it. Let me remove the word potential from it. I believe, as I sit here today on November 30th, I believe the Broncos drafted a special running back in the second round, and I just cannot wait to see what he looks like because I'll tell you this, James. If his carries were that of number one running backs through the rest of the league with his yards per carry, he'd be a top five running back right now, and I believe next season he will be.
Okay. I don't think he's special. I think Jonathan Taylor is special. So to me,
Jonathan Taylor is special, no doubt.
That's the category. When I say special or I say great or I say whatever, that's the guy I'm looking at.
But you're talking about the number one running back in the National Football League.
Okay, and Derrick Henry when he's healthy is special, and Christian McCaffrey when he's healthy is special, and Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara.
But we brought those guys up that Javonte Williams as a secondary back had more explosive plays than Dalvin Cook, than Alvin Kamara, than Derrick Henry even.
Okay. So
By the way, more broken tackles than Jonathan Taylor as of 2 weeks ago.
Okay, that's fine. And we can always find a stat to support our argument. And the more obscure the stat, the better.
Mm-mm.
But here's...
I'm not using obscure stats here.
Here's the thing. You keep talking about how he's a secondary back. Why? Why is he a secondary back? There's three reasons. Potential.
Okay.
Go for it. See if you can guess him.
The contract of Melvin Gordon.
Right. So the Broncos are making decisions based on money, which is foolish.
Yep.
But okay.
And they did this a year ago, and they're doing it again. Pat Shurmur.
So Pat Shurmur doesn't know what he's doing. He's incompetent.
I'm not going to say he's incompetent because Pat Shurmur more than likely has forgot more football than I'll know.
But he doesn't
I just know what I know about this dynamic with the running backs, and he's mishandled it.
Okay.
The third reason I'll say is Vic Fangio hasn't stepped in and said, hey, I'm the head coach. Play that guy more.
The third one is he's better in small doses. They just don't think he's a guy that should get the ball 25 times a game. They're better off with him getting it 12 to 15 and being fresh.
You think that's what they think?
No, I'm just saying that's a potential answer.
Okay.
I think it's one of the first two, to be honest with you, which is ridiculous. If they're making a decision at this point in the second half, well into the second half of the last season of Melvin Gordon's contract, like you've already paid most of that money.
Yeah, right.
You shouldn't be making decisions based on that. That money's gone, and you're spending it whether Melvin Gordon gets 20 carries a game or zero. So that shouldn't be a factor. Do I think potentially Pat Shurmur just doesn't get it? Yeah, because there's been a lot of years and years and years of Pat Shurmur offenses, and call someone in Cleveland or call someone in New York mm-hmm. or call somewhere in a number of the other places he's been, and they would tell you, yeah, Pat Shurmur doesn't get it. So I think those two are the actual factor, but there is the potential that he's just a guy that, you know what, he's better in small doses. We're gonna throw the bowling ball at you 12 times a game, but if we're trying to do it 25, you're going to figure it out and you're going to decode it. That's a potential answer.
I disagree, and I understand that that could be a potential answer. I disagree with that because, first of all, we don't have the NFL sample size yet, just 11 games, right? But in college, he got better and better and better as the game went on. In fourth quarters of games in college, if you just isolate the last stanza of a football game, Javonte Williams averaged 9 yards per carry.
But wasn't he in the same type of situation in college? Wasn't it shared carries
He shared carries with a Michael Carter who got drafted by the Jets in the fifth round.
Okay, so if you can't be the bell cow in college and now you're not
I think you say he can't be the bell cow in college?
Okay, he hasn't been. Okay. He wasn't the bell cow there.
He was not. You're right.
He's not the bell cow here. At some point, do we say, well, maybe there's a reason he's not the bell cow, which leads to the third reason.
Hold on.
He's good in the fourth quarter because he's fresh.
Do your eyes tell you that he is a number one running back or no?
Yeah, and I'd like to see if he can do it.
Okay.
That's why they need to give him 20 to 25 carries a game. I think it would be better to
What do you think he would do with it?
I think he would average 100 yards a game.
Okay, so we're actually kind of, if you average 100 yards a game, you're a top five back.
Okay, well, I don't know that he's a top five back, but man, he'd be in the conversation if he's averaging 100.
He would be.
1,700 yards in a season, he's in that conversation.
Well, hold on a second. If he's 1,700 yards a game, Derrick Henry's hurt,
Dalvin Cook's hurt.
You're on the all-time single-season rushing
Christian
list.
Christian McCaffrey's James. Hurt. He's not better than Derrick Henry. He's not better than Jonathan Taylor. Like, the list goes on and on. So top five is a pretty elite category.
I think he can get there. I really do. I think the Broncos are
foolish not to see what they have there. And it's one of the many mistakes they're making because, we're 6-5 and we're in the hunt. And so we can't break from what's been working, quote unquote. Like, this is, you know, just made them a juggernaut. And so they're not finding that answer, which is one of the many mistakes that they're making over Dove Valley because they are delusional.
All right. We'll hit the pause button on that conversation. It's a good one. But there has been a divisive topic waging for 9 months in Broncos country. Is it officially over? Take a dive into it next.
Listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
There's been a divisive topic waging for 9 months in Broncos country. Is it officially over? I'm talking about is the Drew Lock should be the starter conversation officially dead?
I think the conversation is dead. I don't think the issue is resolved. And, you know, I was on Team Lock during training camp.
Yeah, you were one of the team captains.
Yes, I was. I still have the T-shirt. And it was for a couple of things. One, I thought he played just as well as Teddy Bridgewater in the preseason and at training camp. We were there every single day. I thought they both made mistakes. I thought they both had highlights. I thought it was pretty dead even. One thing I actually agreed with Vic Fangio on when he said it, he didn't believe it when he said it, but it's dead even. It's a flip of a coin. And to me, if that's the case, then you go with the young guy. You go with the guy that has some potential. You don't go with the guy who's on his fifth team. That makes no sense to me. And I still believe that. I do. I think you're better off to go 5-12 with Drew Lock and move on. Or go, if you go 8-9 or 9-8 this year with Drew Lock, it's better than going 8-9 or 9-8 with Teddy Bridgewater. And here's why. Teddy Bridgewater, it's the peak. That's as high as you're going to get. You can make the argument if you do that with Drew Lock that he's going to get better.
8-9 is the peak with Teddy?
Yeah. Whatever they finish this year, that's as good as they're going to end up. If it was Drew, you could make the argument. Doesn't mean it's going to come true, but you can make the argument of, man, it's only his second year as a starter. He's going to get better and better. This is going to build. An 8-9 season or a 9-8 season is not the end of the world. If you're plotting the graph, if it's a plot on an upward trajectory, if it's the peak or it's the start of the plateau, what's the point? And that was my argument about the whole quarterback battle, and it remains my argument. Now, all of that said, is Drew Lock ever going to be the starter in this town? Not so long as Vic Fangio's the head coach.
Take Vic out of it. What do your eyes tell you? Drew Lock going to be the longstanding starter in this town?
Boy, I think it is a very, very slim possibility.
It is like slim, 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 slim.
But do I think that if they hired a Kyle Shanahan type to be the head coach, that Drew Locke could be successful here? Yeah, I do. I think he can be a successful quarterback in this league. I think he's been completely mismanaged. I think he's handled some of the situations poorly, and certainly hasn't stepped in this year when he's been given an opportunity and done much. But it's also a different circumstance, right?
Like, what are you drawing from when you say this? When you like kind of do the, I know you'll disagree with this phrasing, but I'm going to call it mental gymnastics. Like, well, if Kyle Shanahan came here and, you know, Drew Locke could have success, what are you drawing from when it comes to Drew Locke?
What he did with Rich Gangarello as his offensive coordinator for 5 games.
Okay.
Beyond that, he's had...
That's not very encouraging,
beyond that, he's had Pat Shurmur as his offensive coordinator. And so that's the part of it that confuses me in Broncos country. The same people who rip Pat Shurmur and say he's inept rip Drew Locke because he hasn't developed under Pat Shurmur. Well, like,
that's fair.
Don't those things...
There's fairness to that.
...kind of contradict each other? And look, Drew Locke certainly, according to reports last offseason, and, you know, maybe there isn't the work ethic issue, but, boy, they keep drafting guys that have work ethic issue. They had the same Chuck Paxton Lynch under the bus excuse because, by God, it can't possibly be our fault down at Dove Valley that we didn't develop him. It's the kids' fault. By God, it's not our fault we didn't develop Drew Locke. It's the kids' fault. Okay. At some point, when you keep having the same pattern with young quarterbacks, maybe it's a you issue, Broncos.
Well. Selecting a quarterback that works out is very, very hard. And both of those things can be true. Like, it could be that the kid just doesn't have what it takes in terms of work ethic, chip on shoulder, you know, maniacal, cerebral, studier, work, whatever. And also it not be a great fit from a coaching and offensive standpoint.
Okay, but we also, there is such a little league mom keeping the scorebook thing here, right? Of, you know, Teddy Bridgewater had a bad play where he didn't see the blitz and he got drilled from behind and fumbled the ball, right? Like, that was not a good play by Teddy. Now, he was fortunate because there's replay, and when you slow it down to the nth degree and you get hit from behind and your arm goes forward like JFK and Daly Plaza, then they're going to call it an incomplete pass. Okay, fine, you're fortunate of that. So the play never happened. The mistake never happened for Teddy. But Drew fumbles, and it bounces to Tim Patrick, and they get a first down off of it. Boy, he just has no awareness. He just doesn't know what's going on. Or you can go with the play that Teddy made, and 30 minutes ago I said his touchdown throw at the end of the game to ice the game to make it 21-7 was a great play. Was it any better than the play Drew Locke made last year against the Chargers here on the final play of the game to K.J. Hamler to beat the Chargers? No, it wasn't. It was actually not as good because there was a whole lot more pressure on that play than there was on Teddy's play. But one gets put up there like, oh, my God, what a spark. What an unbelievable play. And the other one just gets forgotten like this kid's inept and he can't play at all. And I just think that's unfair. I just think he's getting graded on such a harsh curve that to a lot of people there's nothing he can do wrong. And the biggest issue for him is most of those people are at Dove Valley. The guy can't do anything right in that building. And then when he goes out there, throws an egregious interception, just reinforces it.
Right. But like, do you think the Broncos win that game yesterday with Drew Locke?
Yeah, I do.
See, I don't think so.
I think Drew Locke could have put up negative 8 yards in the third quarter. I think he could have.
I mean, it was one drive.
I think he could have thrown a swing pass to Javonte Williams that went for 42. I do.
Well, how come we didn't see enough of it then, James?
Because he hasn't.
Because you're talking about one guy who is a quarterback for a 5-11 team, and you're saying that the other guy that has the Broncos as winners in December for the first time in 6 years, you know.
And you think that's because of Teddy Bridgewater?
I think it's a big part of it.
Okay.
James,
so,
you know, James.
The guy hasn't played since October 3rd, so nearly 2 months. Hasn't been in a game since October 3rd.
Which is part and parcel of his job. You are the backup quarterback.
I get it, but not everybody's wired for that. You played basketball. Not every guy's good as a sixth man. Some guys got to come out right after warmups and be in the lineup because if they sit on the bench for 15 minutes of real time, they're cold and they can't do it. So he hasn't played since October 3rd.
But here's the thing. Everyone wants to start. No one wants to come off the bench. Some guys are asked to come off the bench.
I get it. But he hasn't played since October 3rd. He hasn't practiced for 2 weeks because of COVID, right? He gets very few reps.
I forgot about that.
So the play to Tim Patrick, in my mind, on the drive that wound up in the touchdown, I think turns into a touchdown throw if he's thrown a pass to Tim Patrick in the last 2 months. But he hasn't, so their timing isn't there. So I'm not going to beat up a guy because in a role he's not familiar with, in a role he's not comfortable with, he doesn't come in and excel at it. I think that's I'm
not trying to beat Drew Lock up. I don't think I am. But I just want to remind you, you're comparing two guys. One guy led the league in interceptions for a 5-11 team, and the other guy has the Broncos as winners in December with a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio. And you're kind of telling me that one guy, I understand. I really do. Because the Broncos aren't going anywhere with Teddy Bridgewater. Like we can agree on that. Can I close my eyes?
Well, you and I maybe agree on it, but it's starting to not be the conventional wisdom around this town.
If I close my eyes, can I see Teddy Bridgewater leading a Denver Broncos team, a Broncos logo on his helmet, playing in the AFC Championship game or in the second round of the playoffs? I just still can't.
But that doesn't mean
the fact that I can't like reasonably forecast doesn't mean that the other guy should be playing over Teddy either.
But see, I don't think saying Teddy Bridgewater or that Drew Lock could have gone out on Sunday against the Chargers and gone 11 of 18 for 129 yards. I don't think me saying that is an outlandish opinion.
But we actually didn't see enough just efficient games where you're not giving it away. Like, and this past weekend's a good example. Drew Lock comes into the game. You're up 14-0. You are at midfield. There is 1 minute and 43 seconds left in the half. The only thing you can't do is screw it
up. Agreed.
And he screwed it up, and the Broncos could have lost because of it.
Agreed. I'm with you. But who called a play to Kendall Hinton? Who called that play?
Pat Shermer.
Okay. All right, now if it's me,
how come we don't see Teddy throwing those picks? If Teddy's got 5 picks on the whole season.
If it's me and it's 14-0, and I've got a guy on the field who hasn't played in 2 months and hasn't practiced in 2 weeks, you know what I'm doing with a minute and a half left?
I'm giving it
to your superstar, Javonte Williams.
superstar.
That's what I'm doing.
That's right. Hashtag my superstar.
You can call a pass if you want, and if it's not there, you know what Drew Lock needs to do? He needs to throw it to the bench. He needs to hit Vic Fangio.
And that's something that Teddy
right
excels at. And you think it like excels like throwing it out of bounds.
I get it. They practiced incompletions.
We were actually trying to throw incompletions.
There you go.
I'm not excusing the interception. I said it on the halftime show. I said it on Twitter. I said it yesterday with the guys in the morning. I'm saying it here again. It's an inexcusable throw. That's the play. That's why he's not playing, is because of that kind of play.
But like 12 snaps, had a fumble, had a pick.
Okay, I get it.
That sucks, James.
It's not terrible. Good.
See you later. It's the opposite of good. It's below not good.
It's not good. But if you think that that's all that guy can be, then he should be done. I don't. I don't think that that's all he can be. And I think he's been poorly developed. And I think they brought in the absolute wrong guy to develop him. I think his head coach is not a guy that's going to develop young players. I mean, we spent the last segment talking about why is Javonte Williams sharing carries with Melvin Gordon. Well, the main reason is because their offensive coordinator seemingly just doesn't get it and doesn't see him right in front of him. Yet we're going to say, well, but he did everything he should have done to develop Drew Lock. Like that. That just doesn't work for me. The question is he done in this town? He probably is. Do I think he should be? No, because I still think in 2022, unless you draft a quarterback or get Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, he's your better option. But they ain't asking me because they're playing a relevant game in December, and down there they're calling Mayor Hancock and seeing if we can get a parade for 6-5.
All right, we are going to hit the pause button on that. We will return to it because whether he should be done here and still be the backup is a separate issue here, and we will get into that. But is the Broncos 6-5 record a quote dangerous mirage? Interesting conversation that we'll take a dive into coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.